The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Oh, we made it to a Friday. Oh, my goodness. These weeks just seem to get longer and longer and longer. But here we are. We made it to the end of another week. And yes, Gaga Crazy 87 in the YouTube chat room. We are now live at 4 Central, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, you know, whatever time it is, wherever you live, and here on NicoleSandler.com and YouTube and Facebook Live and the Progressive Voices Network. So welcome to it. I hope all is well today. Each day is a struggle. I have a hard time grappling with the reality of what we're faced with today, because life kind of sucks. Here in Florida, we have a madman as governor. Actually, he's just a moron. I mean, he's just your average run-of-the-mill racist moron in Ron DeSantis. And Ron DeSantis has been acting like, oh, everything's fine, no problems whatsoever, we're all good to go. In fact, let me share with you a little video of Ron DeSantis from just last month. This was May, okay, when Ron DeSantis got up in front of the cameras with Mike Pence standing right next to him and actually said this.
We succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative, it challenges their assumption, so they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
A bridge in Brooklyn? How about some swampland about a mile from where I live? Yeah. All right. My microphone volume is up high. I'm looking at the levels on YouTube, and it looks like it's way low. But if you guys hear it okay on YouTube, then we're good. All right. I'll bring it down. I was afraid that YouTube wasn't hearing anything. All right. So under that cover, that's our governor. That's our idiot governor. well, lucky us, because Florida yesterday, after breaking records for the last 7 days in a row, yesterday, Florida had, I want to get the number right, 8,948 new cases. Yep. Florida blew past its single day record of 5,511. Set on Wednesday. It's the 19th day in a row the state has hit a new average high. And now, here's the latest deal. Florida, Mike Memoli, reporter at NBC News, tweeted out, Florida has one-third the population of Italy. This single-day case numbers higher than Italy's peak. And it was almost 9,000 new coronavirus cases here yesterday alone. It is just astounding. It is just inconceivable, absolutely inconceivable. And he's doing nothing. No, I shouldn't say nothing, because actually what he did was said that they're going to hold off on going to level 3 opening. They need to shut everything down again. Nothing is making sense. Nothing whatsoever is making sense anymore. We're fucked up. We're totally screwed up. All right. So I guess the volume is still too low on YouTube. Hold on, you guys. I'm working on it. Bear with me for a second. Okay. This should hopefully do the trick. We hope. Let's see. We'll see. I just turned it up. So hopefully that is coming back up. All right. Hopefully that'll get a little bit better. So I'll tell you what, while I try to figure this stuff out, let me share with you today's funny. And as I mentioned the other day, it's It's getting more and more difficult to find the really creative, funny stuff because people are heading out now. People are going out. They're going about their business. They're, you know, pretending like everything is fine. And they're doing it because Donald Trump tells them that everything's fine. It's going away. It'll just fade away. Well, no, it won't. But there's a woman who we discovered. Again, we didn't discover her. She's been making these great videos and music for a long time. And she came out with a new one today. Now, I got to say, the music, the song she chose to parody is not one that I'm familiar with because I'm not exactly a Kesha fan. That's kind of out of my musical wheelhouse. However, Miss Lori Lehman knocked it out of the ballpark with this song. So we'll do it. We'll get things going today with a little bit of laughter before we get to serious stuff with Elie Mystal. And I guess I shouldn't say serious when I'm talking about Elie Mystal because he always makes me laugh because he is a funny guy, but he's also really smart. And I can think of very few people other than Elie that I'd like to talk to about what the hell is going on with our Justice Department because there's no justice there. No justice, no peace. Anyway, I digress. We'll get to Elie Mystal in a little while. But first, this is Miss Lori Lehman. Take it away, Lori.
TikTok users may well be President Trump's latest adversary. His weekend campaign rally in Tulsa. Thousands of people who've gotten tickets online didn't show up thanks to a secret campaign on TikTok.
Wake up in the morning feeling mean and shitty. Grab Melania, gone out the door. MAGA gonna hit this city. Before I leave, they'll believe I can drink from a glass. Cause when I get to Tulsa, I'll act like an ass. I'm talking why I can't walk down ramps, ramps. Ignoring Chinese camps, camps. Maybe how I hate stamps, stamps. Nut job and tickets sold over a million. Overflow out of the building. Here it is, the proof that we will. When full stop, my K-pop TikTok threw their numbers up that night. Took a bite right out of the alt-right. TikTok didn't stop MAGAs from showing up. TikTok didn't stop. They flooded Trump's voter rolls. That's right, they won't know who's going to the polls. TikTok didn't stop MAGAs from showing up. They know we got COVID, but we kick them to the curb if they wear shirts like that hoe did. I'm talking about, here's my Hattiesburg address, dress. How I slowed down the test, test. Do you think I look a little depressed, press? Now, I won't want to say I vote me out. Until then, I'll whine and pout. Tweet all caps and shout, shout. Tweet all caps and TikTok and hip-hop went down through their numbers.
Ah, and there you go, Miss Lori Lehman. Okay, sorry, a little bit extra Lori Lehman there at the end, but creative, right? She's good. And again, I don't know the source music, so I apologize for that. Anyway, Miss Lori Lehman is what she goes as under Facebook or YouTube and all that stuff. I'm sorry, it's the end of a long, long week. No, it's not Gaga. It was Kesha again. Out of my musical wheelhouse, but creative stuff anyway. Yes, it was a Kesha parody. And Kesha, I guess, spells the with a dollar sign instead of the S. I feel so old. All right. So I guess we should get going on the news, right? Because there's a lot of it. So, all right, let's hit it. Oop, let's hit it.
I read the news today.
Hi. Oh boy. It's one of those days. I'm so glad it's Friday. All right. So let me tell you what's happening. Aside from the fact that Florida is hitting a new record with nearly 9,000 new coronavirus cases, well, and they're shutting the bars here. So we got that going for us. Yeah. The House of Representatives today approved landmark legislation granting statehood to Washington, D.C. Yes, it's about time. The vote, of course, was 232 to 180. So honestly, I didn't really check it, but I'm guessing along party lines. It was the first time since the establishment of the District of Columbia 230 years ago that the House of Representatives voted to make the city the nation's 51st state, a change that supporters say would right historic wrongs. Yes, it would. And yeah, okay, now I read a little further, and yes, the vote fell along party lines. Go figure. And let's see, Mitch McConnell has already said he will not allow a vote on the bill. Lovely. Lovely. What else? A ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals panel today said that using money appropriated for military projects on Donald Trump's wall is unlawful. So I guess he's going to take that one to the Supreme Court, too. Unbelievable. So that's the breaking news from today. There's a lot of other news going on. So let's go here. Yesterday, back to COVID for a moment, because we've got this like split screen going on. You have the reasonable people in the world who are saying, stop the madness. Wear your masks. Shut everything down. Don't go out unless you have to. And then you've got the Trumpers who, I guess it's an issue with dead brain cells or something, where they think it's a hoax because Donald Trump told them it's a hoax. The coronavirus task force apparently hadn't even met in, well, since Donald Trump went on television and suggested that we all inject bleach and, you know, shove a UV light up our asses to kill the coronavirus. And he came under so much scrutiny for that, so much criticism, that he stopped doing them altogether. Now, he could have fixed it easily. Was just let the experts run it. But he had to put his fat ass on that stage every day and hog the microphone and act like he knows what the fuck he's talking about when he doesn't. And therefore, we're in this mess. The rest of the country, if you look at any of the charts, all of those charts show the big hikes at the beginning, and then they flattened the curve in many places, and then they dropped down, except here in the United States, where it went up, it sort of leveled out, and then it turned up again. We are beginning to look like the chart from Sweden. Sweden, who didn't do any social distancing, didn't shut down anything, and has had a huge, you know, disastrous effect because of it. We are headed in that direction. So, I don't know what's in store for us. Guess what? Nobody does. But so then now we learn that on its conference call that happened yesterday with the Centers for Disease Control and reporters, the CDC announced that the actual number of COVID-19 infections could be 10 times higher than the 2.4 million cases already known. Why they did this in a conference call and not in a news press conference is beyond me. Merrill Brown, who's the founder and CEO of the News Project, called this an information tragedy. It's a tragedy on every front. You know, even without multiplying the number by 10, the U.S. still reported nearly 40,000 new coronavirus cases yesterday alone, passing the nationwide record of new infections set, well, the day before, but before that, set back in April. And this morning, the U.S. death toll from the coronavirus was approaching 125,000. That's, you know, look, we had Mayor Pete, what's his name, Buttigieg, running for president. He was the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. The population of South Bend, Indiana is less than 125,000. It's like the entire city was killed. Why do people listen to this man? I do not understand it. And I played you what our idiot governor had to say. It's just a travesty. And look, things are worse in other parts of the country, or as bad as they were in New York at their worst part. Now, in multiple places around the nation, the only silver lining I can see on this is that it's hitting Donald Trump's strongholds. You know, those places in the country that are not on the coasts, that, you know, that are red on the map. And people are finally have to realize that this man is lying to them about every single thing he says, every time he opens his mouth, every single time. And on top of this, we have another 1.5 million people applied for new unemployment benefits last week. This is after people are going back to work. Another 1.5 million initial unemployment claims last week alone. So what does the Trump administration do last night? Last night, after midnight, the Trump administration filed a motion at the Supreme Court asking the court to void or invalidate the complete Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. It's stunning. At the day that the coronavirus cases hit yet another all-time high for the second day in a row, the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco, said that once the law's individual coverage mandate and two key provisions are invalidated, the remainder of the Affordable Care Act should not be allowed to remain in effect. Are you kidding me? Are you seriously kidding me? So we have all these upwards of 40 million people who've been put out of work, and because things are FUBAR in this country, the way most people get their health insurance is through their employer, something we need to change. But because of that, more and more people don't have insurance. The Democrats tried to get the administration to allow for a special enrollment period in the Affordable Care Act, in Obamacare, so people who lost their insurance because they lost their jobs due to everything shutting down would be able to get coverage. The Trump administration says, hell no, we're not doing that, and we'll take it one step further. We're going to wipe the whole thing off the map. And, you know, and just if you were wondering, this is Donald Trump just last week in Tulsa promising to protect pre-existing conditions.
We will protect Medicare and right. Social Security for our great seniors, and we'll always protect patients with pre-existing conditions. Always. Always.
Yeah, always. This is the man who lies every time he opens his mouth. By the way, the brief submitted to the Supreme Court last night, and this is a quote, includes a section pointedly arguing that the Affordable Care Act's pre-existing condition rules must be overturned as well. It's opposite world doesn't go far enough. This is so fucked up. It's the only way to describe it. It's just totally fucked up. And then when you look at what's going on in this Justice Department, we should call it the No Justice Department. I'm so glad that Ellie Mistel is joining us today because, you know, he is the justice correspondent for The Nation magazine, and he has a new piece up at The Nation. Well, this is from yesterday. The rule of law is being gutted because, quote, moderate Republicans stayed silent. I can't wait to talk to him about that and to talk to him about what we can expect from the Supreme Court. Now, what the hell is happening with the Supreme Court? Yesterday, they gave us one decision. There were still 14 left. So now they've told us they will announce the rest of the decisions. 13 cases still to go on Monday and Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll be here. So we'll check in with Ellie Mistel and find out his predictions as well, and to see if there's ever if there's any way to come back from the place Donald Trump brought us. You know, on Monday, so much is going on that only doing an hour long show, I don't have time to cover everything. But earlier this week, there was a hearing in the House Judiciary Committee. And of course, Bill Barr didn't testify. Now we hear he's going to come in the end of July. I'll believe that when I see it. But there were a few former attorneys general who testified. including former Deputy Attorney General Donald Ayer. And he was asked about the role Bill Barr is playing in this administration. And remember, this is a former Deputy Attorney General, Donald Ayer.
Afternoon, Chairman Nadler, Ranking Member Jordan, and members of the committee.
Coming. I didn't cue it.
Thank you very much for inviting me to appear today. I was privileged to serve in the Department of Justice under two Republican and one Democratic president, and I am here because I believe that William Barr poses the greatest threat in my lifetime to our rule of law and to public trust in it. That is because he does not believe in its core principle, that no person is above the law.
Wow.
Instead, since taking office, he has worked to advance his lifelong conviction that the president should hold virtually autocratic powers. That includes immunity from nearly all checks and balances and being able to accord special treatment to himself and his friends. The system that Barr is working to tear down was put in place in the aftermath of the Watergate scandals, which involved extensive government corruption and caused a widespread loss of trust.
So that's just the beginning of Donald Ayer's prepared statement, his opening remarks to the House Judiciary Committee. We're in deep shit. This is a banana republic. I was trying to find out what the name of a corrupt Justice Department would be. The banana republic is what this whole nation has turned into. I'm not quite sure, other than a corrupt Justice Department. But we'll talk to Ellie Mistal about that. We'll take a quick time out. Progressive Voices, go to ads. We'll be right back on the Nicole Sandler Show. Hopefully that worked. For those of you still hanging with me, I got some fun to share with you. Fun courtesy of our friend Boca Brittany Summers.
The medical office of Dr. Debbie Birx is here for all of your health concerns with creative medicine, treating the health of patients in a very creative way.
Doctor, I think I got symptoms of coronavirus.
Take your clothes off and stick your tongue out the window.
What will that do?
I'm mad at my neighbor.
Dr. Birx provides compassionate, patient-centered care.
You're pregnant.
How does a man get pregnant?
The usual way. A little wine, a little dinner.
She specializes in care for people of all ages.
You'll live to be 60.
I am 60.
See, what did I tell you?
Doctor, my leg hurts. What can I do?
Limp! Yes.
Excuse me, doctor. The man you just gave a clean bill of health just dropped dead right as he was leaving the office.
Turn him around. Make it look like he was walking in.
Dr. Birx can provide treatment for a diverse range of ailments.
Are you a psychiatrist?
Yes.
Oh, good. Nobody listens to me.
Next.
Can you help me, doctor? I'm a mechanic.
Good. Get under my couch.
Let Dr. Birx prescribe a happy, healthier life.
Oxychloroquine? Hey, I have a heart condition. This poison will kill me.
You're crazy.
Well, if you don't mind, I want a second opinion.
Okay, you're ugly too.
Dr. Birx advises all of her patients to be creative.
Doctor, what do you make of all these scarves?
I can make a hat, a brooch, a pterodactyl.
Dr. Debbie Birx. She doesn't have to practice medicine. She knows it.
Now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. You know that. Coronavirus. They're politicizing it. This is their new hoax.
We have it totally under control.
Way back in January, sociopath Betty denied and lied. Death rate exploding, he brags about ratings. Ultimate Democrat hoax. Well, we all hope he dies. COVID-19.
We're quarantined together. If you wanna help at all,
infect that crazy old clown and just take him on down. CDC can't handle pandemics. Fired the team and made them go. He thinks he'll be the sole survivor by withholding supplies unless you kiss his hole. COVID-19.
We're quarantined together.
If you wanna
help us
if
at all.
If you wanna help at all,
infect the crazy old cloud and just take them on down.
We have between 100 and 200,000. We all together have done a very good job, but 2.2 million deaths and maybe even beyond that. I'm feeling very good about what we did last week.
The orange asshole is tribal dummies. Make the virus take them all away.
I think we've done a great job. I'd rate it a 10.
The orange asshole is tribal dummies. Make the virus take them.
I don't take responsibility at all.
The orange asshole is tribal dummies. Make the virus take the...
And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we laugh because if we don't laugh, then the alternative is that we cry, and crying is not a good thing. All right, in just a moment, and I'm going to bring him on now, but I got to somehow get his shot together. We do have Ellie Mistal. I see him there. I think I even can hear you. Ellie, you there?
I can hear you.
Yay!
I can hear you.
Yay! And now I just got to get your video taken care of. It was here, but, best laid plans and all that. So Ellie Mistal, the justice correspondent for The Nation magazine. Ellie, I got to say, things are so crazy right now. Our Justice Department, I was trying to figure out the proper term to call it, like, what do you call a corrupt Justice Department other than a corrupt Justice Department?
Yeah, it's a trash fire, right? It's a, you can call it the Injustice Department. Yeah. That has a nice ring to it, but it is a structure fire over there at what used to be the Department of Justice.
Right. And, I played a clip just a few minutes ago from the hearing earlier this week with, at the House Judiciary Committee and former Deputy Attorney General Donald Ayer, who said, I'll play it again since you're here so you can hear it.
Justice under two Republican and one Democratic president. And I am here because I believe that William Barr poses the greatest threat in my lifetime to our rule of law and to public trust in it. That is because he does not believe in its core principle that no person is above the law. Instead, since taking office, he has worked to advance his lifelong conviction that the president should hold virtually autocratic powers. That includes immunity from nearly all checks and balances and being able to accord special treatment to himself and his friends. The system that Barr is working to tear down was put in place in the aftermath of the Watergate scandals, which involved extensive government corruption and caused a widespread loss of trust.
That pretty much, gets to the crux of the matter in the first 30 seconds. Did he get anything wrong there?
Nope. Barr is, I think, at this point, easily the worst attorney general since, Reconstruction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to map who would be worse. The Ayers said it exactly right. There is not a thing that Barr believes the president cannot do. And to extend that a bit, because there's not anything that Barr believes the president cannot do, he believes there's not a thing that he himself, William Barr, cannot do while allegedly acting for the president of the United States. So it's, again, it's a structure fire. The rule of law cannot exist if one person or one administration is literally placed above it. And that's what Barr tries to do. He tries to place the president and his administration completely beyond the reach of law.
Right. And Donald Trump, he's got a talent for saying things. I guess he floats these balloons. He said clearly, openly, when Jeff Sessions was in office, "I want my own Roy Cohn." And that's what he thinks the attorney general is supposed to be. And then out of the blue, comes William Barr, who presents himself as actually somebody credible. He was an attorney general before. He's one of the, you know, he's a career guy. He's not one of these crazy Trumpers who turned out to be the craziest of all Trumpers. And yes, now Donald Trump's own Roy Cohn.
Although I have, you're exactly right, Nicole, but I do have to say, like, he didn't come out of the blue, right?
Right.
Like, people did. I noticed that this was not the right guy for the job, right? And you could have known that Barr was going to be a problem. If you looked at Barr's history, the last time he was attorney general, he is most well known for in his first stint for pardoning his way out of the Iran-Contra scandal.
Right.
And he auditioned for the job with a cover letter, an unhinged executive power fantasy cover letter,
right,
that all but promised to prematurely shut down the Mueller investigation. So Barr didn't hide the ball on what he would do if he got this job. I think what happened is that a lot of people, including some Democrats, fooled themselves into thinking because he had served in the post before that maybe he would be a normal guy. I mean, and I think this is part of the general Trump administration story. People keep trying to tell themselves that it's not as bad as it seems. People keep trying to tell them, right? Keep trying to tell themselves that, like, oh, actually, they're going to be adults in the room, right? It's only really been in the last, you know, kind of past 6 months, post-impeachment, post-global pandemic, that people are finally realizing there are no adults in the room and there never have been.
I guess. And you would think the adults that were there, we hoped that they would do the right thing. But as we're learning with each passing day and more people who were in that Trump White House coming forward and saying he's batshit crazy, that these are people who shirked their responsibility when they were in a position to do something about it. Case in point, John Bolton.
Exactly right. I mean, Bolton is the poster child for a coward.
Yep.
For a person who did not do what was necessary while he had the job, did not do what was necessary when there was an opportunity to maybe move the ball against Trump, and is only speaking out now because he has money to make and a book to sell. He is the quintessential coward of the Trump administration. But there have been many others. Right, right. Trump seems to be able to have a unique talent of finding cowards and surrounding himself with them.
Yeah, he does. And it's amazing considering, as he brags about, he didn't even know anybody in Washington when he got there. flies to or like vultures to a carrion, to a dead body or something. Now, back to Bill Barr for a second. I mean, Elie Mystal, this must be weird to you because you take over as the justice correspondent for the Nation, and things, they were pretty screwed up before, but they're just totally out of control. I mean, I look at what Bill Barr has done since he came in, and starting with I think it was the first thing that he did that we realized he came out and totally misrepresented the Mueller report, completely lied about everything that was in it, and then made it so that nobody could call him out on how wrong he got it for like a month in the future until we saw the redacted version of it. And from it was downhill from there. I call this opposite world. It's worse than that, though. We are, I'm saying this is a banana republic. This is not the United States of America anymore, is it?
No, and one of the things that I wrote about this week was how, you know, what we needed was for people to stand up against these bad actors that Trump appoints before they get into power.
That's right.
Once you have Bill Barr in power, once he controls the FBI, it is too late. It is reasonably too late to do anything about him. The only way that he could be removed at this point is through impeachment. We saw how that went with Trump. And we just saw Jerry Nadler say, like, oh, it's not worth impeaching him right before the election. I would have said it was worth impeaching him almost as soon as he got the job, but nobody
listened
to me.
Exactly.
You got to remember, three Democrats voted for Bill Barr's confirmation. Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, and Doug Jones all voted to confirm this man. If you don't stop these people before you get into power, you can't stop them. And so I kind of turn and I look at Jay Clayton. Jay Clayton is the former SEC guy Barr and Trump now want to head the prosecutor's office in the Southern District of New York. This is the whole, like, Barr firing Jeffrey Berman via press release, trying to at least.
Saying that he resigned, and he said, I did no such thing. And so, and then he's like, and then he makes it all about him. Oh, since you chose to air your dirty laundry, well, and then he brings in Trump to fire him. Trump says, I had nothing to do with it. It was all Bill Barr, but he's fired nonetheless. Berman says, well, as long as you don't bring in that Clayton guy, make my handpicked deputy U.S. attorney in charge, and I'll leave. And that's what they did. But this is only a temporary victory, right? They still want this Clayton guy to get through, and he's wholly unqualified.
And well, and he's a, who is he? He's a golfing buddy of Donald Trump.
Yes,
right?
He is.
Why is SDNY important? Well, the Southern District of New York is the federal district that has jurisdiction over Trump's family business, right?
That's right.
Trump Inc. is in the, and so that's why Trump wants a loyalist, a friend, a golfing buddy in that job to oversee the potential prosecution of his business to make sure that his business is never prosecuted. The time to stop Jay Clayton is now.
Now.
Not later, not when he actually gets the job and he gives a press conference saying, like, actually, there was no illegality done by the Trump organ. Not then, now. Stop him now. And that's what we are. And once again, Republicans and institutionalists are not there. The minority party, the Democrats, are trying what they can try as the minority to block his confirmation. But we don't have the so-called good Republicans standing up against Jay Clayton right now.
Right. But but let me ask you this, Ellie Mistal, that we watched for years when the, I think the Democrats were in control, but maybe they weren't in control of the Senate, when the Republicans held up every single thing they tried to do. Can't one senator put a hold on a nomination like this? Can't one senator say, no, I'm not letting this go through?
They've removed the filibuster for appointments.
Oh, that's right.
Right. They did that.
Yep.
So and you know, at first, Harry Reid did it for lower court appointments. And then when they were trying to get Neil Gorsuch through on the Supreme Court, having refused to give Merrick Garland even a hearing, even a meeting.
Right.
When they were trying to get Gorsuch through, McConnell took it away for Supreme Court appointed. So there is no effective filibuster for these people. I would just like to point out to Democrats that if they ever take control of the Senate again, maybe the filibuster also needs to be abandoned for some of the policies and programs that they want to push forward.
If they want to get anything done, I guess. And the whole thing, correct me if I'm wrong here. I've been pissed off at Obama for the whole Gorsuch thing, because Merrick Garland should have had a hearing. Was there anything that Obama could have done? Because it seemed like he didn't do enough. He didn't do anything. Am I wrong to like be mad at him for this?
I struggle with this. Like, it's a struggle for me, because I was there in real time writing about this and commenting about this. I think in hindsight, there are two things that I would have done differently. One, I would have nominated somebody that's not Merrick Garland. I would have nominated a much more kind of what's we're looking for. Openly progressive person, mm-hmm. most likely a person of color. Mm-hmm. And I would have really tried to rally public support around that person, as opposed to what Obama tried to do, what I think which was rally public support around the idea of having a suit, right? So like from Obama's perspective, it wasn't about Merrick Garland.
No.
It was about the seat. I think I would have flipped it and made it about a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, we have to get this black woman, let's say, you know, on the court. We have to get this Latina on the, like, I would have made it about a person as opposed to an idea. So that's one thing I would have done differently in hindsight. And two, I think that it would have been appropriate just to shut everything else down, which is kind of what the Republicans wanted anyway, but just to like, we are not doing anything. I am talking about this 24/7 until you guys at least give my nominee a hearing. You can vote him up, you can vote him down if you want, but you're gonna get on the record. You're gonna give him a hearing. Obama didn't do that way. So in hindsight, I think those things. But in real time, I understood Obama's play. You have to remember that what Mitch McConnell did was so unprecedented. Obama was trying, in the Merrick Garland appointment itself, was trying to be moderate, was trying to get the John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's. People forget that Lindsey Graham used to be a maverick.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Was trying to get the John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's and Chuck Grassley's to break with McConnell by giving them kind of the most palatable choice that he could think of. And I understand from his perspective, you know, this is back in 2016, you know, before Trump has completely taken over the party. I understand, I guess, from his perspective, how that made sense. It's not the way that I would have played it, I don't think. And it's certainly not the way I think hindsight has certainly shown that strategy to have been ineffective. But I got in real time what he was trying to do with that.
Gotcha. All right. But so the bottom line, though, is if the Republicans want Clayton in, there's no filibuster. There's nothing the Democrats can do about it.
There's nothing the Democrats can do about it, which is why I say Republicans, the so-called never Trump Republicans, the so-called moderate Republicans, need to stand with the Democrats. Right.
Without a
doubt. Because the Democrats can't do it alone. But if Tim Scott showed up and was like, you know, I'm not having this. If Lisa Murkowski showed up, if Mitt Romney showed up and was like, no, we're not having this right now, that might do something.
Right. Yeah. In fact, your piece up at The Nation yesterday, the rule of law is being gutted because moderate Republicans stayed silent. And that goes on and on, on every front. I mean, even today, the vote on D.C. becoming the 51st state, completely along party lines. Why? Yep. Why? You know, it's time for some of these Republicans to say, you know what, this is not the guy I'm going to put my life on the line for. Really? You're going to roll over for Donald Trump?
It is the guy they're willing to put their life on the line for, right? Like, and so, like, here's a question. Like, at what point do you have to say these Republicans want what they're getting? Right. Like we spend a lot because they furrow their brows and some of them like send angry tweets or whatever. We act like they are being kind of dragged by their, you know, by their feet kicking and screaming into Trump's orbit. But maybe it's really the opposite. Maybe they just want to be here. They like, I mean, a guy like Mitt Romney, you know, voted for impeachment. Good job. This guy supports 95% of Trump's policies.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, Jeff Flake, former Arizona Senator Jeff Flake,
who seemed very concerned about
the direction the party was going, voted with Trump again over 90% of the time.
Yep.
These Republicans want what they're getting. And we have to accept and we have to remember that when they pretend to complain, we have to remember that when they are up for re-election, the Republicans own this man. They want this man.
That's right.
Yes, maybe they don't like his style, but the substance, to the extent that there is what they are down for.
Wow. You know, I complain often about the Never Trumpers. I hate that they've sort of taken over MSNBC. I mean, you turn on the TV and there's Steve Schmidt and, you know, you name it. Bill Kristol and, you know, on and on. They populate the shows and the airwaves. And I love the Lincoln Project ads and all that. I think they're very creative and very effective. But we have to remember, these are still Republicans who do not want progressive policies to take over. They would like nothing more than to take over the Democratic Party and turn it into what the Republican Party was before Donald Trump destroyed what they had going on. Am I misstating anything there?
I think you're exactly right. One of the things that Never Trump Republicans are funny to me, it's because like they forget that their policies are massively unpopular.
Right.
Like nobody actually wants kind of moderate Republican policies. The Republican Party has proven, the Donald Trump Republican Party has proven, that they only pretended to want the kind of like Paul Ryan limited government policies because they understood that it was a way to get some racism in there. Once Trump was just like, hey, you can have the racism without the limited government, without the budgetary constraints, without all the Republican Party was like, oh, sure, we'll just take the racism then, right? the actual core of this kind of, you know, conservative movement, conservative cabal about small government and limited, that is actually a massively unpopular platform.
Right.
They are trying to make the Democrats adopt that massively unpopular platform. And for reasons passing my understanding, there are some Democrats that seem to be willing to go along with it. And so you'll see, for instance, Democrats now talking about how, well, you know, if we get in charge, we got to balance that budget. Man, nobody doesn't care about balancing the budget. The Republicans don't care about balancing the budget. Like, why should the Democrats suddenly be that party? It didn't work for the Republicans. It's not why they got elected. So, the Democrats don't ask me about their
Don't ask me either. And now they go to the Supreme Court after midnight last night to try to get them to totally scrap what's left of the Obamacare. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. And then I got to ask you, Ellie Mistal, about you have a piece up today at The Nation on my other subject that I wanted to talk to you about, and that's the Supreme Court. So I'm sure you were there with me at 10 a.m. yesterday thinking we're going to get a load of decisions announced because the month ends on Tuesday and they had 14 left to go. And they announced one. And I don't want to lessen what they did yesterday because they did something really, really shitty yesterday. But now we learned. So they're going to announce 13 cases on Monday and Tuesday. They're going to announce decisions beginning at 10 a.m. Let's talk about what they did yesterday, what you wrote about at The Nation today. The Supreme Court just took a hammer to the asylum process. And some people reported, you know, they saved the Dreamers last week. That's not what happened at all. They didn't save the Dreamers. The Dreamers got a reprieve because Donald Trump and his cronies don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, so the two immigration cases the last 2 weeks are important. The DACA decision is a great win, but a temporary one.
Right.
Because the reason why Roberts upheld DACA was not because he thought that the Dreamers had kind of a legitimate claim. Instead, he thought that Trump's attempt to end the program was so bumblingly idiotic, which it was, that he just couldn't go along with it, right?
Right.
Make no mistake, if Trump gets reelected, they will take another shot at ending the DACA program, and the next time they might succeed because as we saw with the Muslim ban, Roberts will give these people multiple bites of the apple, multiple tries to get the words right. And so DACA is still under threat because of the way that Roberts ruled to defend the program temporarily. What they did yesterday was straight up just end the ability for asylum seekers to appeal decisions against them.
Right.
Which I can't emphasize enough how terrible that is. It means that asylum seekers essentially have no rights. Right.
Right. No rights.
If you can come into this country and get arrested and then put in a detention camp, and then an immigration judge the technical term is immigration judge. These are not judges. These are immigration judges are employees of the Justice Department and report to, wait for it, Bill Barr employees. So that immigration judge can deny your claim for any reason at all. And you have not having a right to appeal that decision means that we basically have to take if you're an asylum seeker, it means that Trump gets to decide whether or not you have rights, not a court of law. That's just it's horrible. It's a horrible decision. It was a horrible decision written in a mean-spirited way. Because Samuel Alito is one of the worst
He's
just a mean guy.
Horrible.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's where we are with immigration. Like, I can't the way that the Trump administration has stacked not just the Supreme Court, but the federal judiciary in general with hardcore arch conservatives who are virulently anti-immigrant, anti-woman, and anti-gay. Is a problem that we're going to have for a generation. And that's assuming Trump loses.
That's
God
right.
forbid he gets another term.
Well, and Mitch McConnell just announced, I think it was yesterday, that they filled their 200th federal court vacancy. There are no more vacancies on the federal bench for the first time in like 40 years because they kept shoving them through because they did away with the filibuster. And so the Democrats couldn't hold them up. They have packed the courts with people who most of them, I think, got a unqualified mark from the American Bar Association. That used to be a no-brainer that would disqualify them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's most of. I don't think it's a majority of them, but many of them did. Look, you were criticizing Obama earlier. This is a place where I will criticize Barack Obama because in the period from 2009 to 2012, in the period where Obama had not just the White House but they controlled the Senate, I did not think that the Obama administration was nearly hard and fast enough out of the gate filling federal positions, right? They weren't ready for that fight in a way that McConnell was born ready for that fight.
Right.
So there are two reasons why McConnell has been able to fill so many justices. One, they were just ready. They had their whole list and they were ready to go, and it's the only thing they cared about. And two, because McConnell was so good at blocking Obama judges, there were quite a few vacancies available when Trump took office. So it's been this has been a long-term plan by Republicans to remake the federal judiciary.
Yep.
200 appointments in under 4 years is a record by a long way. And again, these are people who are appointed for life, can only be removed through the constitutional process of impeachment.
Uh-huh.
We are going to be stuck with these people for a generation.
Then we get back to impeachment. Couple of questions along those lines. Should Bill Barr be impeached?
Yes. And I don't care. I don't care if he gets impeached on November 2nd and the election is November 3rd.
Yep.
We have to say that this kind of lawlessness will not be acceptable. Like that has to, the precedent has to be, if you are a lawless executive sycophant like Bill Barr is, you get impeached. Regardless of whether or not the Republicans have the will and the strength to convict him, that should be something that the Democratic Congress does. They can do it in a day. It's so obvious. They don't need to.
But we thought that was the case with Trump too. So do you agree with John Bolton that the Democrats blew impeachment?
No, I don't agree with John Bolton with anything. and the last person I'm taking advice on
is John
constitutional processes is John frickin' Mustache Bolton.
Gotcha.
No, I do not think Democrats blew impeachment. Republicans blew impeachment when they refused to convict the president, even though they basically all admitted he committed crimes.
Right. And they know it. They know. Look, you got Lisa Murkowski saying, well, I'm really struggling with whether or not I can vote for him. Why are you struggling? How do you not know that you can't vote for this man? That everything around us is turning to shit because of the idiot in the Oval Office. It's just mind blowing. I go back to my opposite world theory. Nothing makes sense. Everything is the opposite of what it should be. So, Ellie Mastal. Monday and Tuesday, we're going to get 13 more Supreme Court decisions, including abortion rights, contraception coverage by the Affordable Care Act by employers, Trump's financial and tax records among the biggies. Why do you think they've held them to the... I know they always hold the big cases for the last days, but this felt like a bit much to me. Am I making too much of it?
I mean, I don't know if COVID played a role. I mean, look, technically speaking, the Supreme Court releases cases when they're ready.
Right.
When they're ready means like somebody's written a majority opinion and then somebody's written a dissent. And then the person who wrote the majority opinion reads the dissent and addresses it. It does take time. And I don't know if because of the social distancing and the quarantining, if some of these kind of some of this back and forth just took a little bit longer than usual. But it does seem a little bit odd that so many cases are really left for the last 2 days. The other thing worth remembering is that technically speaking, the court doesn't have to release all of its cases. Doesn't have to.
Oh, really? They can save some for next term. They can hold on to some and not announce decisions. Say they can decide not to rule on Trump's tax records, whether or not we have the right to see them.
They could.
Oh, shoot.
I mean, I don't think that they will, but it's technically completely within their discretion to rule on a case when their discretion is to rule on a case when they have a ruling. Oh. If they don't know what they're going to do with Trump's taxes yet, if they want to wait until the next term, if they want to wait till after the election, there's nothing legally, let's put it like that, to force them to. They could what's called relist. They could just decide to rehear the case. hey, we're not sure which way they're going to go. Now, again, I don't think that that's going to happen. But I'm just pointing out there that when you see a day, when you see like 13 or 14 cases that are supposed to come out in 2 days, just remember, all 14 of them do not have to legally come out in the next 2 days.
Wow.
The Supreme Court can do whatever the Supreme Court wants to do.
So could they conceivably announce some decisions in July, or would they have to wait till next term?
Yeah. I mean, look, the Supreme Court, I mean,
they could do what they want to do.
It's a courtesy that the Supreme Court even tells us when they plan to release decisions.
Oh,
right?
My God.
They can release decisions at midnight on Friday if they want to. So, yeah, they could hold it to the law. Again, I don't expect that to be the case. I expect to see at least 10, if not all 13 or 14 of these cases in the next week. But they could release them whenever they want to release them.
Well, I will be following.
I'm taking the week of the week after next. I'm taking off. I have put my flag down. I'm on vacation. I don't care what they do.
Good for you. But next week you'll be there Monday and Tuesday, and everyone should be watching your Twitter feed at @ELIENYC as these decisions come down. Because you know I love reading you, Ellie Mistal, because you're not only factual and informative, but you're really funny too, and I appreciate the humor, because if we don't laugh, the alternative is much, much worse. So one last question before I let you go, because we're getting close to the end of the hour. We had a pretty good day on Tuesday. It's looking like perhaps the protests, perhaps the hitting, you know, the breaking point with the treatment of black people in America by people in authority, police most notably, has it just reached the point of too fucking much, and people have taken to the streets and we're saying no more. This is enough, and the tides are turning. Am I reading this correctly? Do you agree with my take on it?
The progressive victories in local elections on Tuesday was amazing. I've heard a couple of people try to poo-poo, a couple of establishment Dems try to poo-poo the victories, saying like, oh, but it only happened in safe Democratic districts. Yes. Sometimes in a safe Democratic district, that's where you need to elect your most aggressively progressive Democrats.
That's right.
That's okay, right? I am happy to deal with a more milquetoast moderate Democrat if that's the way to win a red district. But in a blue district, like where I live, you best give me an actual progressive. And where I live happened to be the district that elected Jamal Bowman over Elliot Engel, right? I was very happy about that. So yeah, I think Tuesday was a really good sign. I think, you know, a big sign from Tuesday is, you know, you come at AOC, you best not miss.
That's right. Because talk about a routing. She won something close to 75% of the vote. And they put up a very high-profile TV personality who is popular, former Republican, who's probably now a Republican again, that she lost. But nonetheless, she didn't even reach 25%. Yeah. That was
AOC is out here embarrassing people who spent a lot of money against her.
Right.
So, I mean, like, those are good signs. And yes, AOC's district is a safe blue one. My district is a safe blue one. Good. I'm glad that we are electing actual progressives in safe blue districts, and we can worry about the red and purple districts another time.
And so, and any closing words on what's happening in Kentucky in the Senate primary?
They keep counting those absentee ballots, and it keeps looking like Charles Booker is going to be the one to take on Mitch McConnell. Look, there's no more important race besides literally the president himself than beating Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, and that could happen. I mean, McConnell is going to do everything he can to suppress the vote, especially the vote of minorities in Kentucky. But he could lose, and that's great.
That would just be what we need right now, because we do need that. We have needs right now in this country, and we need to heal ourselves from this last 4 years. And I think the COVID infection is part of the manifestation of Donald Trump. It's just sickness.
I look forward to one day tearing down a statue of Mitch McConnell. That's my
you and me both. I will join you, Ellie Mistal. I will be there with you, and I will tear it down with you. Thank you so much. Ellie Mistal, you are always a treat to talk to. I so appreciate your time. Find Ellie on Twitter at ElieNYC. Read him at The Nation, thenation.com. Ellie Mistal, thank you so much, and we'll keep our fingers crossed next week.
Thank you for having me.
You take care. Bye-bye. And there you go. Ellie Mistal, he really is. He's just so good. And I do. He's He makes me turn up the television every time he appears on the screen. So that's a good thing. All right, we're done for today. Have a wonderful weekend. Monday, we'll do Music Monday and have the NOLA Resistance here. It should be a good one. And Supreme Court decisions. Oy. All right, try to have a good weekend. I'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye.